Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Michael Jackson made culture accept a person of color way before Tiger Woods, way before Oprah Winfrey, way before Barack Obama.
All right. How big was Michael Jackson? Thriller, of course, remains the best-selling album of any kind of all time. And I remember 1984 or so when Michael Jackson was so big that a spoof New York Post came out with the headline, "Nuclear War, Michael Jackson, 2 million others dead." And that was a joke, but it gives you a place, a sense of Michael Jackson's place in culture and pop culture and celebritydom back in the mid-80s. And one of the unusual things about Jackson was his relationship with his blackness. And we will talk about that and the music, and we'll take your calls and posts on where you were, when, what Michael Jackson song has meaning in your life. And we'll talk about all this with Tricia Rose, who is from Brown University, professor of Africana Studies there, and author of The Hip Hop Wars, What We Talk About When We Talk About Hip Hop and Why It Matters. Hi, Tricia. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Good to talk to you, even though it's a very sad day.
It is a very sad day, and especially for people who love Michael Jackson. And I think people are kind of remembering how much they used to love Michael Jackson, even if they came to sort of dismiss him as too weird for much consideration in recent years. Just to prompt people to write in and call in, we do have the question up on our Facebook page and our comments page. Talking King of Pop, can you mark a milestone in your life with a Michael Jackson song? Someone wrote to me, I went to my first big sleeper party when the Thriller video came out. I was 9. We watched the video, and I was really scared by it. So we'll see what other people have in terms of Michael Jackson memories. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Where were you when Billie Jean first came out? Or ABC? Or take your pick. What did Michael Jackson's music mean in your life? What memories of your own life does a Michael Jackson song conjure? 212-433-9692. And Tricia, there's he was a pivotal figure in so-called crossover pop, and we heard what Reverend Al Sharpton just said there outside the Apollo. But there's also the famous photo sequence of Jackson appearing to become more light-skinned over time, and a lot of people were aghast by that and the implications of it. So where do you begin with Michael Jackson's place in black history?
Well, I mean, I think that, Brian, is really such an important question, because where he is situated in the history of African-American music, culture, and life is really where we should begin, because too much of our public conversation so far since his passing, and frankly his commercial celebration and mockery in the mainstream media for the past 10 years or so, really hasn't been interested in that, right? There hasn't really been enough interest in thinking about how, what he comes out of, what traditions he channels, what kinds of black music he transformed, how he related to and drew from gospel, from soul, from rhythm and blues, and from jazz, from funk, to bring an entirely new formation of those musics into the modern world, using new technologies to bring a funk into an electronic era, as it were. The way he transcended, the way he took dance and transcended it from its earlier eras and brought it into new moments. I mean, he was just really extraordinary in that way. Now, in terms of this public what he looks like question, you know, I'm glad you're asking it, because I've been really disappointed watching the mainstream coverage of him, because all they're interested in really is Michael Jackson as a celebrity, strange celebrity, right? I mean, first of all, we must remember no one who has lived a life like his could possibly be quote-unquote normal, whatever that would be. You look at, you know, all of the major people in the world like this, and they, you know, they tend to be eccentric to one degree or another. I'm thinking here of, I can't remember his name right now, the recluse, the very Hughes, the incredible recluse.
Right. Howard Hughes.
Hemingway was, a bit odd at the end. I mean, there are a lot of people who come to these these ways after being under so much pressure.
It's funny, my impression of the network coverage is a little different than yours so far, because I thought it would be just a circus focusing on his weirdness and his child molestation charges.
Right.
But it seems to me the media is paying a lot of homage to his music and the love for him around the world.
Well, I mean, but they are, Brian. I mean, that's what I'm saying may sound one-sided, but here's why. Because they have no choice. The level of outpouring of love just to do proper news coverage requires that you address that. So I think that most of that energy is about figuring out how to include what people are demanding gets covered. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't want to cover it. It just means that I think that there is this sort of freak factor that people are obsessed with.
Now, and look, he was highly unusual, more than most, world-class celebrities, right?
No doubt. But his life, but this is exactly why literacy about his past, about being raised in a house, with, maybe a 900-square-foot footprint, with nine children and two parents, and in Gary, Indiana, in what was ultimately, as in that moment, the ways in which black communities were still segregated, even though they were northern and urban, where there was both promise and incredible fear that those changes for civil rights weren't really going to materialize, that particular historical moment, what the industry was like, what radio and entertainment was like in terms of segregation, what era he came up in, all of that, and then this incredible global explosion that he precipitates, and to manage all of that. Now, there's this question about his skin disease and whether or not that is part of why his complexion was changing, Did he have vitiligo, a skin ailment that where you lose pigment? He says it. Other people say it. Other people don't believe him, They think sort of, this is sort of racial self-hatred manifesting.
You have an opinion?
I think he has vitiligo. I think he does. And I think part of his facial plastic surgery, which I think is quite evident as well, is about matching skin color with features. I think that, and an anxiety about the self, and about a sense of self, I wouldn't quite say self-hatred, but a feeling that he would be more universal if he weren't so African-derived looking. And I think that is the message of American culture for 400 years. I mean, what we need to ask when we look at Michael Jackson is, what context did we set up to unleash what might have been his own personal demons, but to create a setting where those demons would take hold?
Right.
Because there's nothing unusual about him if you unpack his behavior and look and surgery and even his illnesses and his talent if you don't understand the history of race in its ideas, in its social construction in American society. Once you understand that, he actually makes tragic sense. That's the part that I want to see. I want to see us connect him to ourselves in that way and still hold him personally accountable for whatever he might be personally accountable for.
Well, he is, after all, the man in the mirror. And Trisha Rose, professor of Africana Studies from Brown University. From our comments page, Steve from Astoria, Michael Jackson was an artist, and his body of work knew no color. To hear Al Sharpton talk of Jackson as a hero of race and the man before Obama is an insult to both Michael Jackson and President Obama, not to mention every black artist from Louis Armstrong to Marvin Gaye. What do you think about that, Trisha?
Well, I think I understand what I think's behind that comment, and I'm just speculating that somehow to mention race reduces these great figures, But if you are a person of color, or particularly an African American person, then I think you would be very surprised to hear that race really doesn't matter, and that to somehow identify the hurdles that race creates is to somehow be an insult. I mean, in other words, it's to say that if Michael Jackson were not African-American, and if he were not bringing African-American music, which is the other point here, to the mainstream, he would have been, I argue, 2 and 3 times bigger than he already was. He did have to cross over. America has to be honest about this. Louis Armstrong had to figure out how to make whites feel comfortable in an era of full segregation. All right. This isn't about saying that he could say whatever he wanted at any time, do whatever he wanted. It didn't matter that he was African American. He couldn't speak about certain significant truths about his life and maintain white approval. That is unfortunate. I mean, but the only way we get past that is to be honest and then say, wow, what gifts. Now, Michael did do an amazing job of creating the perfect kind of cross-racial exchange. So what I think your guest or writer here, the person writing in, is getting at, mm-hmm. is that he was able to not use race in a negative way, but to speak through that suffering in a way that brought people together. He was a brilliant medium of that.
And, of course, he was pivotal in integrating MTV once upon a time when it was a bastion of white artists' music videos because they just couldn't ignore Beat It because it was right. So good. Amala in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Amala.
Hi. I wanted to share that I met Michael Jackson when I was working as a personal secretary to Elie Wiesel and his wife. And there was a rabbi that was trying to bridge the gap between African Americans and the Jewish community, and he thought, what better way but then to bring Michael Jackson and the other very great iconic figure, Elie Wiesel, together. And so they had this private meeting, and it was I didn't witness it. I was busy, but then I was invited to come out and take a picture with him, which was kind of interesting. I wasn't a huge fan, but I knew he's a great artist, and so it was impressive to me. And he was very shy and quiet, and suddenly I found myself saying, "You're vegetarian, aren't you?" And he said, "Yeah," and we started to have this conversation, and it was really nice. And it just seemed like he just wanted to connect with people on a very real, honest, and kind of ordinary way, and he missed that type of contact, and so it was very neat. And I know that they did issue, I think, a joint statement, and I think later on Michael went on to speak at Oxford in England. That was the whole deal. I don't know if that actually mm-hmm. happened, but it was an effort to try to bring the black community and the Jewish community together.
And it's a great memory that you have of a great moment. Amala, thank you very much. Alex in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Hey there. I sort of have an interesting story. I'm 23 years old, so I grew up in the late 80s and 90s, and I always loved Michael Jackson, his music, and especially his videos growing up in an MTV culture. So I remember the first time, actually, that I learned that he wasn't a white man, that my mom told me, actually, that he was a black guy, and that kind of just, like, really warped my mind, because I'm looking, basically, what I thought, at this white man singing these songs, and the fact that he was a black man just really kind of turned me on my head, and I didn't really get it. And then I go back into the Jackson 5 and see all the things that he's done, and it's almost like listening to old Beatles and comparing it to new Beatles and just having your mind expanded and seeing, wow, like, this guy actually is coming from a past that I never attached mm-hmm. to him and is making this music that is actually black music, not just disco or pop music, but comes from R&B and comes from blues and comes from even funk and soul. And it's just one of my big memories that I remember about Michael Jackson.
Trisha Rose, Africana Studies professor at Brown University. Yeah. Want to talk to Alex?
Wow, Alex, that's a heavy memory. And I really appreciate the fact that somehow you were able to, despite what he looked like in the last moment, to follow that trail back and see where he came from. I mean, you know, part of it is that we don't even know in many ways in this country what black music is. Right, it's saturated everywhere in our popular right. landscape, but we don't in fact recognize the hallmarks of it or know that tradition, and we've deprived our young people and even our adults of a certain kind of cultural musical literacy. You can't share if you don't know what you're sharing, right? And
right.
you can't exchange things if you don't know what you invented and what you didn't. So part of the problem here is that he was segregated and separated from that history as he managed what was either, you know, a self-imposed racial problem or a physical, technical, medical racial problem. It's just unfortunate that the way we deal with celebrity separates people from these traditions. I mean, MTV, not alone, BET, we just need more knowledge about, I mean, these artists are richer if we know their histories and pasts and relationships, the Beatles, Elvis, everybody. We need to know the history out of which they come. Their talent is made even greater in the face of that.
Alex, thanks so much for a great call. And we'll continue in a minute with your memories of Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson's relationship to his blackness. Post from our comments page. Does anyone remember when Jackson 5 singles were on the back of cereal boxes? I believe my big brother and I had I Want You Back and ABC in that format, an actual 45 RPM single that you poked out of the back of your Cap'n Crunch.
Ridiculed him. It's amazing in the last hour to see how many people are now praising him that wouldn't go near him in the last several years.
Rock with you, Michael Jackson, and Reverend Al Sharpton speaking outside the Apollo Theater last night on the positive tone of the media coverage that he was seeing. We're talking about Michael Jackson's relationship with his blackness, as well as taking whatever Michael Jackson memories you have. Our lines are full at 212-433-WNYC. You can post to our comments page or post to our Facebook page, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show to get to the website. And we're talking about all this with Tricia Rose, professor of Africana Studies at Brown University and author of The Hip Hop Wars, what we talk about when we talk about hip hop and why it matters. And Tricia, your book is about hip hop. Was Michael Jackson a precursor to hip hop in any way, or just an entirely different spawn of Motown and R&B in a whole other direction?
Oh no, I mean he's a precursor in many ways. He was one of the first to really take breakdancing seriously and bring it to the mainstream in his early videos. And he was particularly inspired by the dance, I think, just partly because of where his gifts are and also the use of rhythm. But, you know, the rich polyrhythmic call-and-response layering in his music was so interesting because it was both ancient and modern in black musical traditions. And so he was especially interested in hip-hop because of its modernity, its focus on the technology about it. And no one saw there to be this huge gap. Now, he was not a rapper per se, but in terms of the kind of music that he wanted to inspire, there was a great connection. Now, there's a big gap, and that is that, you know, hip-hop is not known for its love ethic. You know, hip-hop as a genre struggles to continue the explicit focus on love as a basis for justice. It doesn't articulate that as well as the rest of the black musical tradition does. And so when you really think about Mike, or just listening to him, you know, my family and I, my husband who's been a Michael Jackson fan, I mean, extraordinaire, and my stepson who grew up on him entirely, has almost every single record. I realized how much Michael is about, you know, love and justice. Right, and the way those things are attached, and that's really the power of what he brought. And I think in some ways he has a lot to teach the hip hop generation, right, about how you can have a profound love ethic for humanity, for yourself, for relationships, for family, and still be as incredibly funky and cutting edge and exuberant. Do you see what I mean? So
I
it's
do.
Not one or the other.
How about
and,
that?
And Mike is just a genius at helping us see that.
Carol on our comments page. Does anybody on Earth not know how to do the moonwalk? In the early 90s, we witnessed soldiers from the mighty Soviet Army, she says, were doing the moonwalk in Moscow. He was that big. Guy from Manhattan on our comments page writes, I was born in 1984, and my mother listened to so much Michael Jackson when she was pregnant with me. I'm told that for the first 6 months of my life, I would snap to attention at the first note of any MJ song to come on the radio. And he writes, I wonder how Michael stacks up to Mozart. And Isabel from Harlem writes on our Facebook page, being biracial, I could always relate to what appeared to be Michael Jackson's confusion about his own race. Certainly his confusion manifested itself in a very extreme way, but we shouldn't have expected anything else from this man. Everything about his life was extreme, and we wouldn't be discussing his legacy and his genius and mourning his passing in such an intense manner if he hadn't been a figure so far beyond our comprehension. So that really echoes what you were saying before, Tricia.
Yes.
Leon in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Leon.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Leon?
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny, just the comment that you just read about confusion, essentially, and race and culture and identity here, it still actually continues. The exchange that your guest had with the earlier caller who didn't realize that Michael Jackson wasn't black until afterwards, it goes to this larger thing, I think, of... and your guest still sort of repeats it in this kind of, you know, black cultural nationalism thing. The fact is, whether you're talking about as far back as Louis Armstrong as such, or if it's Duke Ellington, or eventually even Michael Jackson ultimately, it's not so much that it was an attempt to create or push a black music into America. It's deeper than that. As I wrote... American music, American popular culture has always, from the start, been a miscegenated affair, something that's always been developing, but with the imposition of the fact that larger America, white America, could not be allowed to openly identify, and the triumph, the importance, which I wrote about so in so I made so important in my book, was Michael Jackson's was the first, and you know, sort of brought along the Jackson 5, was the first black act whose commercial might was so great that literally a Fortune 100 company, Pepsi, was willing to bet the farm, saying that we have no problem
good
pushing
point.
100% identification. We don't care which kids have his poster on the wall.
Right.
You know, we're
right. Those are great points. And this, for in case you don't know, Trish Rose, I don't know if you two know each other. Leon Winter, the author of the book American Skin, and Trisha Rose, you want to react to any of that?
Well, yeah, you know, Leon, it's nice to meet you over the phone. We've never met or spoken before, but I will quibble a little bit with this notion that I'm making a black cultural nationalist argument. To claim that there are black musical traditions does not mean they're exclusionary. That would be like saying there are European musical traditions. Of course, they borrowed from various parts of the world, but they have points of origin and they have identities. In fact, you can't make sense of the power of their hybridity and change in the world unless you understand some of their origins. That doesn't mean that you hold on to origins as a purity factor. That's absurd, and that I would never argue. There's no doubt many cross-racial exchanges have built all the music of America, but it has elements of those traditions, particularly those fostered by people of African descent, have legacies and traditions, and those legacies and traditions have not just been randomly expressed. They have been cultivated, and they have been institutionally despised. Now, individuals are not responsible for that, but our institutions are. For example, if you look at music departments around the country today, the study of African-American music is quite limited in that tradition. The study of European music is rather extensive. So what we have here is a cultivated illiteracy about these traditions, which then force us into a conversation about the only way to talk about who we are is in terms that don't acknowledge the specificity of what we've brought. Now, I'm all about the exchange, personally, publicly, politically, musically, but I don't see one as antithetical to the other. And I don't see why we have to deny that power of the fact that soul, R&B, all the traditions that Leon mentioned come out of mostly segregated black communities with traditions that are profoundly valuable. I think we can have both.
And Leon, I don't want to turn the rest of our limited time into an exchange on this point. I think both of your thoughts are important and out on the table now. So Leon Winter, thanks a lot for calling in. And we're going to get to Lauren in Brooklyn now. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You have a memory.
I do. Michael Jackson was actually the subject of my first crush and also my first reoccurring nightmare. I distinctly remember choosing between cotton candy and puffy Michael Jackson stickers at the circus, and the stickers won out. And then I also remember, I think I saw Thriller when I was a little too young, and literally until I was about 11 years old, I had a reoccurring nightmare of Michael Jackson with sort of hair aflame, like from the Pepsi commercial stuff, and I'd have to walk by his house on my way to school with a big gorilla in his front yard. It was like all of these things I was hearing in the media. But I found myself so like so many people, so kind of heartbroken last night. It was like the end of this era.
Why are people afraid of Thriller?
You know, I was about 4 or 5 when I saw it, and I think it was the closest thing to like a zombie movie I'd ever seen.
Yeah, a lot of people were scared of Thriller.
Lauren, thank you. Another memory from our comments page. Brianna, listening in Montana. Do people listen to Michael Jackson in Montana? You bet. She says, while most young kids think their parents are big dorks, I knew from a young age my mom was totally cool. She'd pick me up from school with MJ blasting and dancing in the driver's seat. I can't remember a road trip without my mom singing his songs. I am grateful to Michael Jackson for all those fun memories of my hip mom. And oh my God, we're out of time, Tricia, but I just wanted to touch on the BBC reporting from Africa today. It says, in Nigeria, a presenter on Radio Continental broke down live on the air and could not continue her program. A woman in Ghana burst into tears in the capital. In 1999, he was presented with a Lifetime Achievement Award by South African icon Nelson Mandela. Was in 20 seconds, was he big in Africa?
He was huge in Africa. He was a symbol, really, of how racial traditions can be transcended when they're negative, but musical and cultural traditions can bring us together when we're connected. So, I mean, he was big around the world for peace, for justice, for love, and for this incredible power of the funk.
Tricia Rose, professor of Africana Studies at Brown University, author of The Hip Hop Wars. Great to have you on this day, Tricia.
My
Thank
pleasure.
You very much.
All right. Have a great day, Brian.